Case this morning is State versus Schreiner. Mr. Mercure, good morning to you.
Hey, police department, my name is Steve Mercure. Deputy Public Defender for Richardson County, Nebraska. And I was the attorney who tried this case with the as indicated, the claimant's severe in this particular case. Defendant's contention in this particular case that the district court erred in failing to suppress physical evidence and statements against him at trial for the following reasons. First of all, we were alleging arguing that the law enforcement unlawfully detained and seized minor, thereby violating his Fourth Amendment rights, also maintaining that custody for purposes of Miranda warnings and was not giving Miranda warnings, and thereby his Fifth Amendment rights were violated, and finally that the consent obtained from Mr. Schreiner on the date of this of his arrest not freely and voluntarily given and was an exploitation of a prior Fourth and Fifth Amendment violation. For those reasons, we believe that the district court erred in this particular matter. First, address the issue of his detainment. Back to this particular event, read the case and the facts involved in this matter. Schreiner was detained by an officer on the front step house in Humboldt, Nebraska, by Deputy Kirkendall, basically was kept there for a period of time before eventually gained entrance into the house. We would note that this particular case, analyzing the case itself, if you look at the police citizen encounter rationale that's utilized in analyzing these situations, tier one, of course, is voluntary cooperation. Tier two would be the investigative stop or investigatory stop. And tier three would be a lengthy search or detention or arrest of an individual.
When did the entry at the house or the locking the door, when did, from that point to the detention, when did it change?
Well, the state's position, I think, is that basically, it was a tier one encounter, and then it went to tier two when the officer told Mr. Schreiner he could not re-enter the house. And they, in their position, is it goes to a tier three when he was actually arrested at the conclusion of actually taking the officer through the house itself. Our position would be, if you look at the factors involved in this particular case, that actually he was detained from basically the time he came outside the house and had contact with the officer because of the area he was confined in, or at least standing on his step. One area was some bushes, the officer was standing on the other side of him. He couldn't basically get away from there. He never did attempt to leave the area. The officer told him he couldn't re-enter the house and made calls on his phone to the sheriff while he was standing there with Mr. Miner at that location.
What is the fact that he locked himself out of the house have to do with anything? Is that relevant?
I don't think it's relevant in this situation because he was told he couldn't re-enter the house. I think he did eventually go around, if you read the facts, take out a pane in a window to get in the back of the house, I think at some point in time, to actually let the officer into the house. But the fact that he was locked out, I don't think it was significant in respect to determining whether or not he was going to be. The actual situation was such that I think the question becomes, would a reasonable person have believed he was not free to leave the premises? I think under the circumstances, if you look at this, I think you can make that determination. A reasonable person would not have believed that he was free to leave the premises.
Did Mr. Schreiner ever ask if he could leave the custody or leave the location?
He never made a request that I know of.
Did the officer ever tell him he couldn't leave?
I don't know that was ever said.
The record, the trial court had the opportunity to review a body cam footage of the entire incident, didn't it?
That's correct.
And that's in our record, correct?
Right.
What are you seeking to suppress?
Everything.
From what point to what point? What, is it statement? Is it the consent? Is it the things found inside the house? At what point do you believe there's something that is suppressible?
Well, I think if you look, let's talk a little bit about the fair seizure as opposed to the custody evaluation of the Fifth Amendment. I think it's important to look at because that was never analyzed by the court itself, whether or not he should have been given Miranda warnings there on the steps of the house.
Let me ask another question then. Did he make any incriminating statements on the front porch?
Yes.
Okay. And what was that?
Well, I think there was indications that he talked to the officer out there about there might be methamphetamines inside the house. That was obviously a statement that was against him.
Was it pursuant to interrogation? Was he asked the question, what have you got in the house?
He was being asked questions during that time.
Was he asked that question?
Don't recall.
Let's assume that it wasn't, that question or its equivalent wasn't asked. Wouldn't that be a volunteer statement?
Could be determined that, yes.
And if so, is there a Fourth Amendment?
I think at that point in time, if he's
or a Fifth Amendment,
or if he's in custody at that point in time, I think if they haven't given him Miranda warnings, I think it's still an issue. I think that's
I beg your pardon. What did he say that's critical that you seek to suppress on a Fifth Amendment basis?
Well, I think there were statements made about what was in the house. I think there were statements made about him smoking marijuana. There were statements of that nature being made on the steps of the porch. Now, keep in mind, this was after the officer had indicated that he wanted, I think there were specific inquiries about marijuana use. Said he could smell marijuana. That was occurring. I'm going to go on a little bit briefly in respect to talking about seizure under the Fourth Amendment, then you go on to the Fifth Amendment in respect to custody. We specifically focused on the six different criteria in State versus Dyer, as well as the Griffin case, to talk about specifically whether or not this individual was in custody. And I think if you look at all those factors in this case, you'll make the same determination we did, that we hit on all six. He was in custody.
At what point?
From the time basically the officer encountered him on that step.
So he was detained and in custody from really the minute he steps out onto the porch?
It goes back to the question that you asked earlier, I think, regarding whether or not he was told that he could leave. He wasn't told that. That's one of the criteria that you have to look at when you're determining whether or not that individual is in custody.
You're referring to asking if he had, pardon me, the officer asked him to remain on the porch, is that the fact?
He told him he couldn't re-enter the house.
Okay, and when the defendant wanted to go in the house, the officer said, not right now.
Correct. If you look at those criteria, and again, I want to just point out that fact that the first question is, to ask is whether or not the individual is informed at the time of the questioning, voluntary, that he was not considered to be under arrest, and that that he was free to leave. Never told that at any time. In addition, whether or not the individual had unrestrained freedom of movement during questioning, again, that wasn't present in this particular case. Third item was whether the suspect initiated contact with authorities or voluntary acquiesce to official request to respond to questions. Again, they initiated the contact. He didn't have any contact with them. In fact, didn't come to the door until the officer had knocked, I think, 17 times on the door to get him to come to the door. Next question is whether or not strong-arm tactics were being used or deceptive stratagems were employed. And that goes to the consent issue, because if you look at the consent issue, this particular case, he wasn't given Miranda warnings. and obviously he couldn't give a consent, a valid consent to search, but even beyond that.
You have to give Miranda warnings before you ask for consent to search?
If you don't, in this particular situation, if he's in custody, then that's an invalid, valid consent.
Have we ever held that?
What's that?
Have we ever held that?
No, you have not, but I would cite you to a case that was given to us in the state's brief, and the court could take a look at that. That's U.S. v. Rebels, that's cited in the state's brief. That specifically stands for the proposition that you may not be seized, but you could still have rights, Miranda rights, that would apply in a custody situation. I think that's an important distinction for the court to draw in this particular case. But going on to the consent issue, I'm out of time, but on that particular issue.
You may finish your thought.
The officer told the individual that a warrant was being written. That's an important issue in this situation, because only then, is he allowed to enter the house. I think it's clear at that point in time, my client had declined to allow them to search the house until he was told a warrant was being written. I think that's an important distinction for the court to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, good morning to you.
May it please the court. My name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Reiner argues that part of his motion to suppress violations of rights. Error here, that being the only appeal we ask. So as opposing counsel mentioned the argument, and as I understand it, there's really three main points that he made in his motion to suppress. First, unlawful seizure. Two, properly obtained Miranda statements or statements in violation of Miranda, and then the consent issue. As far as the seizure, I think it's fairly straightforward. The framework is well established as far as the police citizen encounters tier one, tier three. This starts out as a tier one. In my brief, probably 4 to 5 minutes in, arguably it becomes tier two, 5 minutes in.
When, in your opinion, when does it become a tier two?
Probably when he tries to reenter his house and the cop says no, cannot. That, as I said in my brief, is probably 3.5-4 minutes in, and before that ever occurs, we have probable cause to arrest. So we have, first off, factually speaking, the officer arrives at the neighborhood to serve papers, and he smells marijuana in the vicinity. He then talks to several of the neighbors. They point to the defendant's house, walks up to the defendant's house, knocks. Defendant comes out. Defendant comes out. Along comes with him a strong odor of marijuana, both from the house and from his person. 30 seconds or so, he admits to smoking in the house. That's all about 2 minutes of the recording before he's ever seized, and we have probable cause to arrest. So any subsequent seizure, that's an investigatory detention or arrest justified under the Fourth Amendment. Problem. As far as the statements, basically you have to have custodial interrogation for Miranda to come into play. I don't think that there was custody, i.e. there's no the equivalent of formal arrest. There was no detention or seizure until about 45 minutes into the thing when he's actually told. We're under arrest, goes out, takes him to the truck, handcuffs him, puts him inside.
The trial court did suppress some statements.
Yes, the trial court did suppress about, I think, a 30-second exchange toward the end, about an hour into the recording after the formal arrest, after he'd been handcuffed and put in the truck. The court determined that there was some interrogation there, and it was, say, 4 to 5 statements that were suppressed. But before that, before the being put into the truck, which is the main incriminatory statements, he was not in custody. He was walking freely. He was not handcuffed. He was smoking cigarettes. He was checking his fridge for Mountain Dew. He was calling people on the phone. He was basically, it was a pretty friendly encounter, all things considered, I think, when you the interrogation recording, you'll see that, or encounter recording, excuse me.
Was he being interrogated on the porch?
I think that could be considered interrogation, yes, but he wasn't in custody. Have a Miranda problem. But as far as the questions that were being asked, he kind of from the get-go says, you know, Juana, what's the deal? I would say about 5 minutes in, and then is saying, hey, can you look away if I let you in for 5 minutes while I dispose of something? And that's when the meth starts getting talked about. So there's definitely questioning, I think, at that point, but they're in custody.
Is your framework then the voluntary admissions at the beginning of the discussion amounted to probable cause, therefore to arrest? So therefore, everything else has to be fit into that knowledge.
Yes, basically.
The officers had enough to arrest, so therefore.
Right. So for the Fourth Amendment question, we're just asking if you have reasonable suspicion for investigative detention or transitions to free if you have probable cause for arrest. Had probable cause here in our estimation.
Whether or not that was expressed
right
to the defendant.
Right. We had it about 2 minutes into the interrogation video, still a tier one police encounter. Subsequent seizure arrest that came after that was justified. That is our position.
Is that limited to the Fourth Amendment issues?
Yes. Fourth and Fifth Amendment issues, analytically distinct. That's what I cited the Revels case for. Basically, it's just emphasizing the Berkemeyer Supreme Court case that says, okay, you can have a seizure that doesn't rise to the level of an arrest, but still be in custody. So it kind of gets into that, I guess, crossover questions, I guess, on have fourth seizure.
Right. In the moment within an encounter at which the Fourth Amendment rights are clear and as distinguished from the Fifth Amendment rights.
Yes.
Any questioning during a seizure doesn't require Miranda.
If the seizure, that's where you get into sort of the analytically distinct question, because if the seizure is equivalent to in custody, you would have to provide Miranda warnings. Statements would be pressed. But you can, I guess, just keeping them analytically distinct, you can have a seizure without an arrest, but that seizure might end up being in custody. So they're separate questions. That's what that Revels case is really saying.
When those two rights spring into effect.
Right.
May not be the same moment on the same facts.
Right.
Thank you.
For example, a traffic stop, you're seized, but that's not necessarily, generally speaking, you don't get Miranda warnings. So then on the final issue, the consent issue, totality of the circumstances test, I think that his consent was voluntary. Proper promises or threats given by the officer. He emphasizes change about the warrant, request to get a warrant, and I don't think that that arose proper coercion under this case law in State v. Tucker. The officer can say, all right, I'm going to ask for a warrant. What happened here? Proper.
There's some discussion about an arrest. At that point, we're talking about the warrant, and all you're going to do is arrest me or something of that nature?
There was. It was about, let me get exact timing here. Something about maybe 9 minutes in, and the defendant makes some reference to being under arrest, and the officer says, no, that's not what I'm doing. And he actually says that a couple different times further on in the interrogation, basically saying, hey, I'm not arresting you. You're not under arrest.
What impact does that have?
Well, I think that goes to the custody question under the Miranda, basically telling him you're not under arrest, you're not in custody.
It's not dispositive of that issue.
No, it's just one factor. This court said in Rogers and other cases, how did the circumstances, you've got the Axum factors, you've got 9 or 10 listed in Rogers in addition to that, and then, you know, totality, so anything that would fit into the question is also fair game.
Were the officer's actions at that point consistent with the appellant not being under arrest?
Yeah, I think so.
And how so?
Well, he wasn't restrained at all. It's a conversational tone. They're just kind of talking back and forth. The officer steps back from the front porch while he's on the phone with the sheriff a good amount of time. So he's not even talking to the defendant. And then, like I said, it's a pretty friendly encounter, all things considered. Defendant's cracking jokes about smoking a bowl, going to the bridge. I mean, it's not the equivalent of, not the coercive environment that Miranda was targeted for.
But are the facts undisputed that the officer asked defendant to remain on the porch while officer made the call?
Yes.
Were the facts that he told him to remain on the porch, or he just couldn't go back in his house?
Well, yes, more of the latter. He was not allowed back in. He wanted to go back into his house. There's a couple different times, and the officer's on the phone, and he's basically saying, no, no, sir, he cannot go back in the house. He has to change his clothes. Pajamas, I guess, bottoms, and change. Not allowed back in the house, basically. Fear that he would destroy any potential evidence of marijuana. That's where he's asking to flush it. Court has further questions. We ask that you affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is Wheeler County, Nebraska versus Howard.